against Orozco. Mr. Mullins.
Thank you. May it please the Court, my name is Brian Mullins. I represent John Orozco on this appeal of his conviction and sentence from the District Court. We've raised three issues for appeal. The first is the issue of whether the search warrant was supported by probable cause, and if not, whether the officers acted in good faith in executing the warrant. The second is whether other act evidence was properly admitted under Rule 404B. And the third is whether the gun enhancement under Sentencing Guideline 2D1.1B1 was properly applied. I would like to focus my argument today on the search warrant issue, unless there are questions from the panel on the other issues. But first of all, the search warrant, we believe the District Court correctly concluded, was not supported by probable cause. And that was because essentially the warrant was based on the officer's experience that he had indicated in the affidavit. His experience was that members who are in the higher echelons of street gangs tend to keep records of drug activity at their homes.
You know, Mr. Cook.
Mr. Mullins.
Oh, my son. I'm so sorry. I'm back there on the last case. I'm sorry. It seems to me that we don't even have to get to the issue of whether the warrant was supported by a probable cause, because even if probable cause was lacking here, Mr. Orozco hasn't rebutted the presumption that Agent Burris relied in good faith on the magistrate's judge's issuance of the warrant. This circuit has not conditioned probable cause on the proof of such a link. And if anything, if you look at the case law, the court has sympathized with the view that in the case of drug dealers, evidence is likely to be found, you know, where the dealers live. And Agent Burris reasonably could have believed that the evidence that he set forth in his affidavit, including his own experience with narcotics trafficking by gangs, was enough to supply probable cause to search his home. And it's really a logical inference, it seems to me, that someone who is likely to have records related to his criminal activity, like drug ledgers, for example, that, you know, they're going to keep them at home.
That might be a logical inference. I think another logical inference is that one would want to conceal those records from the place where law enforcement would most obviously look, which is at their home. And I think it's also a logical inference that perhaps the higher upper echelon members of a gang might not want to keep the records themselves and rather kind of put that off on the lower members of the gang. I think there are a number of reasonable inferences that could be made, and I think the mistake that the officer made here was not providing any kind of examples of prior cases where he had experienced a second in command of a gang who had kept records at his residence.
That sounds like Aguiar and Spinelli, that in order to show that a witness is reliable, you have to provide prior instances. But, of course, Aguiar and Spinelli were overruled by Illinois against Gates. I mean, why should we replicate in a somewhat different area a couple of overruled cases?
Well, I understand it's a totality test, and I think it's one of the factors the court should look at. Were prior examples or were other examples offered? And here they were not, in addition to the fact that there was no specific nexus between the home and drug dealing, other than the fact that Mr. Orozco lived at this residence. But all of the evidence that the agent had at hand.
Suppose the police have probable cause to believe that Perkins robbed a bank. Could a judge issue a warrant to search Perkins's home for the proceeds?
I think I don't believe that is enough. I think there has to be some kind of connection between.
The defense I've given you is perfectly normal, perfectly ordinary warrant. Now, why is this any different? Acts as a drug dealer rather than a bank robbery, searches home for drugs and drug records.
Well, I think because all of the evidence that the officer had indicated that the drug dealing didn't go on at the home and actually went on, I think, as close or as far as 20 miles away from his home. There was no evidence that any of the people who had purchased drugs even knew where Mr. Orozco lived. Somebody said that they thought he lived somewhere in the country, and that was about as specific as it got.
I don't understand the significance of that.
Well, I think
suppose Green is a lawyer, and you have some reason to believe that Green is cheating his clients. There are two places where the records might be found. One is his office, and the other is his home. The fact that his office was 20 miles from his home wouldn't make it inappropriate to search his home. I'm just puzzled by this. The kind of search that's going on here, that is, we know X has committed the following crime, and we suspect X has evidence of crime at his home. See, is, so far as I can tell, a perfectly normal basis for issuing a warrant.
Well, I think there has to be
See why it's wrong. It's a bad basis here.
I think there has to be some kind of rationale for why law enforcement believes X has kept something at his home, just because it is X's home. For example, there could be prior cases.
X generally tends to keep things where he is. Now, it's true, if we knew X to be Blackbeard the pirate, we might suspect that he'd buried the loot in the Caribbean. But that's an abnormal inference, one would think.
Correct. But I think the danger is that, which is what the Sixth Circuit alluded to in the Schultz case, is that by imposing such a low threshold, and by just saying if a person is a suspect, therefore you have probable cause to search that suspect's home for evidence of a crime, that is getting to that general, I believe the statement from the Sixth Circuit was, it invites general warrants authorizing searches of any property owned, rented, or otherwise used by a criminal suspect, just the type of broad warrant the Fourth Amendment was designed to foreclose.
That sounds historically ignorant. A general warrant under the Fourth Amendment was a warrant to search for anything. That is, a warrant would be issued allowing the search of a warehouse to see if there were smuggled goods, even though there was no probable cause to believe the owner was a smuggler. That is, a warrant is made general by the scope of the search. This was not a general warrant. It was a search for particular kinds of things.
Correct, but I believe it was a general warrant in that the place to be searched.
No, it's not a general warrant. I've just told you what a general warrant means for the purpose of the Fourth Amendment. Your argument is it was without probable cause, not that it was a general warrant.
Correct.
A general warrant, to put it otherwise, a general warrant is a warrant that flunks the particular description clause of the Fourth Amendment. This was not a problem of the particular description clause.
Correct. I guess our reliance on Schultz is for the premise that just because a person is a criminal suspect does not give law enforcement probable cause to search that suspect's home. And I think the probable cause analysis also impacts the Leon good faith analysis because...
Do you have any comment about the bearing on this of our opinion in United States against Watts? This is where Judge Rovner opened the questioning here about Leon. Watts seems to be a very similar circumstance.
And I'm aware that the court found no probable cause, but found good faith.
We said in Watts that we didn't have to decide the probable cause question because under Leon it didn't matter what the answer was. Now, is there any way your position about Leon could be reconciled with our holding in Watts?
Well, I still think the probable cause analysis in the way we are arguing good faith here, because we are arguing that the warrant so lacked in indicia of probable cause that there could not have been good faith, that probable cause has to be analyzed also. I will reserve the rest of my time.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Mr. Mullins. Mr. Eldon.
Barry Eldon on behalf of the United States. Defendant's argument here is that there was insufficient or no nexus between the drug dealing set forth in the affidavit and the defendant's house. But as this court held in Lamont, you don't need a nexus consisting of specific evidence. And that's really what the defense counsel is arguing. That you have to have specific evidence linking the drug dealing, the gang activity, with the house. And that just simply is not correct, as this court held in Lamont. And therefore, it's the government's position that the affidavit did set forth probable cause, because the affidavit did have set forth evidence of drug dealing with three cooperating witnesses, did set forth activity regarding the gang, the relationship of the gang to violent activities, the defendant's place as a leader in the gang, and then set forth further the agent's opinion based on his experience that drug records and gang records would be in the house. And that is consistent with Lamont. In any event, there can be no question about the good faith of the agent. The agent did not undertake this search until he got court authorization. And there is no reason for him not to believe that this affidavit was sufficient, because really what the defendant is focusing on, what the district court focused on, was the nexus between the activity and the house. And it was the agent's opinion that there would be records in the house based on the activity. And as this court said in Lamont, evidence is likely to be found where a drug dealer lives. So since the agent's own opinion was consistent with this court's opinion in Lamont, it was entirely reasonable for the agent to rely on the warrant.
Sorry. Regarding Lamont, it doesn't matter at all in your view, Mr. Elden, that incriminating evidence had already been found in the defendant's secondary residence and automobile before permission was sought to search, the primary residence?
I think that is significant, Your Honor, but the case is not distinguishable on that ground. In other words, if there is evidence that the defendant is a drug dealer, there's reason to believe that you'll find evidence of the drug dealing where the defendant lives. In that case, there was drugs seized. Here, there was interviews of cooperating witnesses who were gang members who said that the defendant was a drug dealer of long standing and a leader in the gang. And therefore, we think that the FBI, the government acted in good faith when the FBI relied on the search warrant in this case, and accordingly, the district court ruled correctly by denying the motion to suppress. I'm happy to answer any questions on the other two issues. I don't intend to discuss those because the defense counsel did not. But if Your Honor would,
I had another question.
Certainly.
Could Judge Lefkoe have allowed Officer Woods to testify about seeing Mr. Orozco grabbed something out of his waistband and throw it to the ground, and even about finding the gun on the ground without letting in the testimony that he had pled guilty to possessing the gun? In other words, why was that particular piece of Officer Wood's testimony, which is really quite prejudicial, necessary to make the government's point about Mr. Orozco being right-handed?
Your Honor, we submit it was not unfairly prejudicial because it proved clearly that the thing that the defendant drew from his waistband was a gun. Now, what the district court did do, it limited the testimony. We couldn't introduce into evidence the kind of gun, which was a .44 Magnum revolver, which the district court considered prejudicial. But to make beyond any doubt at all,
uh-huh,
because the defendant is still arguing on appeal that, well, all he did was just throw something to the ground. We don't know what it was. We know what it was. It was a revolver. There's no question about it that it was a revolver. But if all we did was have the witness testify to the movement, and then the officer going back along the trail and finding the gun, there might be some wiggle room there. There might be some argument, well, we don't know. He didn't see that particular gun come out of his hand. Some question there. And I don't think – I think the jury could understand the limiting instruction. This is only offered to prove that the defendant used his right hand for firearms.
Was defendant's counsel permitted wide latitude cross-examination?
Yes, sir.
How do you remember, 10 years later or whatever, many years later it was, that it was the right hand, et cetera, et cetera. There was a lot
yes,
of latitude.
There was, Judge. And as is clear from the sidebars, counsel was aware that it was in the officer's police report
that
he
used
the right hand.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
I mean, had it not been in the police report, then that witness probably would never have testified.
Yeah.
But it was. So counsel didn't ask that specific question, how do you remember?
Yeah.
He knew what the witness would say, so that question was not asked.
Yeah.
In any event, we submit that the district court ruled correctly on this issue as well as the other issues, and we respectfully request the court to affirm the judgment of conviction.
Thank you. Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Mr. Eldon. Anything further, Mr. Mullins?
I'd like to briefly address the 404B issue. Just to clarify, our argument is not that it was not a gun or we don't know it was a gun. There's no issue that it was. But it was not necessary for the district court to allow the jury to hear that it was a gun. I think it would have been sufficient to have the district court allow the jury to hear that he had thrown something with his right hand.
Well, the only reason this was relevant was because he was claiming his defense was that these guns weren't his, right, that they belonged to his wife?
Correct, because he is left-handed and the holster was set up for a right-handed person. And we do argue that the act of simply tossing a gun carelessly while running away from the police is significantly different than consciously setting up a gun to use with your right hand. And because they were not sufficiently similar, that's why the evidence should have been precluded. And I think it was extremely prejudicial not only to the felon in possession case, but also to the overall drug case, because it showed a general predisposition to criminal activity by running from the police, et cetera.
Thank you very much, counsel. The case is taken under advisement.